Welcome back, fight fans, and welcome to this week's episode of the Ultimate MMA Podcast. Today, I bring you exciting news that you are tuning in right now to episode 20 of the Ultimate MMA Podcast. Yes, that's right, we've reached 20 full-length episodes of the podcast that started just this year in July. I'm your host, Jake Jones, my co-host this week. He's here to stay, and he's been smashing it over social media for the past few weeks. He's been destroying it. It's our guy. A pleasure to introduce Sean Gilley. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Yeah, I'm buzzing. This week's just been so mint. Especially with the fights as well. Jesus Christ.
Well, not just with the fights. What else is good news for you? Go on.
Yeah, I've got a PlayStation 5.
He's ordered the PS5. He's one of the lucky people. He's got he's been searching for the last few weeks or so for it. So I'm glad you've got him, mate. And I'm glad that it's going to actually be arriving on his birthday. What a story.
I know.
Well, obviously, my end as well. I've just been busy with work. But in this day and age, you can't complain about that. This week's episode will actually likely be shorter than the rest. We only have two fights either way to talk about. But we are also going to talk a little bit about boxing again, as we did last week. But let's not waste any time. Let's get straight into it. We're going to talk about the co-main event of last weekend. Miguel Baeza's first round submission over Takashi Sato to send the man 10-0. What did you think about this bout, Sean?
Mate, I thought it was going to be a striking bout. I thought it was going to be kickboxing, but then Baeza took him down, that lovely takedown, then to get his back, then to transition with an arm triangle. Jesus Christ.
Absolutely.
He's a full package. He is.
I have to completely agree with you. I was quite surprised that there was going to be a knockout. That's literally where I saw this going. Them two standing on the feet, and then said, I always thought Baeza would win it, but to do it in that fashion was very, very interesting. The one thing I do want to bring up just beforehand is, for me, this wasn't a co-main event. I know I say this most weeks, but it was never meant to be, and that's why I do have an exception to this bout, because obviously the main event being out and Smith stepping up into there, this then had to step in the co-main event. So it's not the UFC's fault that this was there. But I was quite surprised, because I think a lot of sites wrote Baeza off for this fight. I know he's the UFC favourite when the night happened, but on other sites, I'd seen Miguel as a heavy, heavy undergod. Undergod? Underdog. An undergod, though. That's undergod. A good name, isn't it?
That's a good nickname. Yes. I'm going to use that in the next fight, yeah.
Yeah, that's someone like Joaquin Buckley, like where you're the underdog, but then you do something godly in the fight, you're now the undergod. But yeah, going back to Baeza, he is a top talent, and he knocked out Matt Brown. So that's why I was quite surprised that kind of people were thinking Sato was going to take this, especially at like quite decent odds as well. Now, I think the fight was... I think actually the fight with Matt Brown was partial to this problem. He got wobbled a few times by the veteran, but that's what you have to expect. You're coming in against a guy who's just fought of like short of 40 professional fights, I think. Mm-hmm. So Baeza had 9 fights when he fought Brown. Brown nearly had 40. You can understand that Brown can read the game a little bit better than catch him. Whereas against someone like Sato, I genuinely thought, yeah, this is a great fight for Baeza. And I thought he did an amazing job in the fight. Landing them body kicks and landing that right hand was perfect for him. That was just causing Sato visible problems throughout the fight. He had the cut underneath his right eye, I think it was. Yeah. And then he had big bruising on his ribs from their body kicks. You can see that Baeza was putting him through a world of pain from the very first minute. And another thing I love about Baeza, he's got a really high guard.
I was seeing his right hand up all the time.
Exactly. And this sometimes can make you susceptible to body kicks and counter strikes, but when it works, I love it. And I find he has a similar guard to what Gaethje has. If you watch it, when it works, it's almost Muay Thai like although they don't stick their legs up, they always cover their entire head. It's as if they're grabbing the back of the head when they put their guard up. It's not kind of just the fist near like by the chin. It's literally putting it right over your face so that they can't really do anything. Like, if it land, you have to be one powerful man to get through that guard. And as I said, for me, when it works, it really works. And it just works better than those who have that kind of low guard approach. I just noticed a few times Sato would try and push. And because Baeza had this high guard up, he couldn't get through it. And it's definitely something worth noting and worth looking out for in his next fight, is that if he continues to adopt that style, I think people are going to have a hard time putting him out.
Yeah.
But talking about that, what is next? I'd like to see the UFC take it slowly with this guy, get him maybe to like 13-0 before we see him fight a top 15 guy. maybe someone like Alex Oliveira next or James Krause. They would both be good opponents. They're veterans of the sport, but they also fight very differently to Matt Brown. They're not a guy who'll go in there looking for the KO, but a guy who's going to test you over three rounds. For me, give him a good ride in that division. Let's not do a Chimaev where he goes to number three ranked in the world immediately. Or do a Tony Ferguson where he has to ride 13 wins to even get close to a shot. Let's say six or seven fights, he's two or three down now, and then we can see him pushing for that kind of top 15, top 10 shot. He's definitely the real deal, as you said. I just hope that he's not pushed stupidly, and equally, I hope that he gets a decent fight next, where it's a name where you think, okay, yeah, I do want to see Baez or in a co-main again, or similar ilk. Well, let's move on to the main event of the evening, and the prediction last week was pretty spot on, wasn't it, man? Literally, Anthony Smith did us all a favour and disposed of Devin Clark in just over 4 minutes of the very first round. It wasn't even over 4 minutes, it was about 2.5 minutes. I must say, I think we were pretty spot on last week by saying not only did Smith need to win, not only did he submit him, but Clark kind of showed that he isn't at that top level just yet. Yeah. And he's not at that level that he needs to be to take on these guys. I was impressed that he tried to start the fight sharply. He came out with a heavy kick followed by, I think it was a heavy left hand, or it might have been heavy right, that and rushed to push Smith against the cage. And I think we all thought, oh, Smith might be hurt here. However, the moment he did that, Smith just reversed the position, and it was really weird. I think he tripped Clark down with a takedown, but honestly, it just looked like he squeezed Clark and Clark fell down. Mm-hmm. It was really strange. Like, it wasn't a solid takedown. It was basically just strength over balance. I said it wasn't like you saw him go for the trip and spin or anything. Literally, he just had him, I guess, in the clinch, and Clark just kind of fell. But I must say, off the bat, I'll eat my words a bit from last week, because I was surprised at Smith's corner work. Mark Montoya and the team at Factory X made it very interesting, and they did a very, very good job. They made a really smart and unique decision by telling Smith to come away from the cage and keep the fight in the middle on the ground.
That was beautiful, that was mint.
That was awesome, actually. And Smith literally dragged Clark over to the centre of the octagon, which you just don't see often. Like, I get Smith's a powerful 205-pounder and stands at like 6'4", so he's not easy to evade, but I think this is kind of where you saw Clark's inexperience come into play, because I'm not joking when I say Smith literally grabbed Clark and dragged him four times into the centre of the octagon. It was really, really weird to see, because you just don't see that thing, and in my opinion, that was kind of Clark's moment to explode out of the position and try and get back onto his feet. But as I said, I was very, very impressed by Montoya by saying, take this to the centre, don't give him the cage or anything like that, and clearly it worked, because a minute later he submits him. Having said all that, obviously Clark did manage to reverse a very, very bad position and end up on top, and that was where he was able to land most of his strikes. But then again, flip the table, Clark got sloppy and Smith locked in the triangle choke, which Clark tried to escape, but ultimately was forced to tap, and Smith sent himself back into the win column. And that's what I mean, is I do like Clark, but I think it kind of just showed, like, he starts off the fight heavy and well, and you think, okay, gets taken down, you think, yeah, I expected that. He reverses the position, you think, cool, cool, and then he gets submitted, and you think, yeah. He's just not got that, in my opinion, he's not got that experience and versatility just yet that you think he can dominate a fight. I do think the fight was nowhere near a main event, and once more, I know it wasn't meant to be, but I think having a fight like that even risks damaging the image of the UFC, as it doesn't attract top level combat sports. Like, that look that you think, imagine trying to show your friend this and being like, oh mate, yeah, there's a fight on tonight, like, let's get into the sport. Okay, yeah. And you watch that, you go, what, these two are the main event? Oh wow, okay, fair enough. And as I said, I know that sounds harsh because it's not the UFC's fault, but it kind of goes back to what we were saying last week with Paul Felder, saving the day. Like, if Paul Felder wasn't fighting, if RDA Felder wasn't the main event, that would have been a very, very average card. And I think that's kind of just what's happened here, is that we needed someone to save the day, and in my opinion, it wasn't the best fight. But you have to work with what you're given, and I do think Smith did a very good job on the night. Did you know this was his 50th professional fight at 32 years old?
Jesus Christ.
That's amazing, isn't it? I mean, he's got 34 wins, 16 losses, but 18 of his wins have come from first round finishes. Like, he is actually very, very experienced. And, like, all around, you think, well, at 32, to get 50 fights in, that is bloody impressive. He's a really good guy, in my opinion, just having the sport. And I really enjoyed his post-fight interview. He said he owed this to the fans and to Dana, as he's had a shitty run recently. That's literally what he said, and he couldn't put it better. It's honest, and I think that's what we need more of. He even credited Clark's strength, which we don't always see, and I like stuff like that. I like it when they say, like, a fighter goes, yeah, I was hurt, or, like, as I said, like he says, yeah, that man is strong. It's nice because it's kind of like giving your opponent some credit. I know, once more, I've said it before, I'm not a major TJ Dillashaw fan, but he said the same when he fought Cody for the first time, I think. Cody knocked him down in the first round, and in his post-fight interview, literally with the belt around his waist, in the centre of the octagon, he said, yeah, man, I was hurt. He said, he's very fast, but I was able to recover. You thought, good. You didn't lie and say, do you remember, who was it? Gray Maynard, when he knocked himself out by dumping some guy on his head. And then he's like, no, I wasn't knocked out. No, I was just resting. You were knocked out. And as I said, I just like seeing the honesty. And Smith won me back over, really. Felder said it best, that it was nice to see him looking refreshed and rejuvenated, and I think that was awesome. I hated, after his loss to Glover Teixeira, I think he almost had an arrogant look at things. I remember Jason Herzog took the blame for the fight, because it did go on probably two rounds more than it should have. But then Herzog put a statement out saying there's only one man who should be responsible for fighter safety in the octagon, and that's me, and I didn't do that. So Smith will say, put a like out of a tweet saying, oh, I think this is a coward's move, the world is soft, manner, or something like that. And for me, that's just not the Smith that I like. I like honesty, but I felt this was more like he was trying to be too honest, like put that hard man face on, like, I've seen shit, that type of guy. So for me, in this post-fight interview, he just seems so much happier and genuinely a better guy. Yeah. I know that sounds weird because, yes, he won this fight and he lost the others, but I still think in a loss, you shouldn't have that almost arrogant look. Honesty is fantastic. Arrogance is awful. And as I said, it's lovely to see him back as this kind of genuinely happy fighter. Who's interesting as well. Because you sometimes see these type of guys win who aren't going for that title yet, and you see them win, they kind of get on the mic after, they're like, yeah, I don't know, you're like, yeah, I thought I did it. And you think, come on, man, like, give us something. And I think that's what Smith did. What's next for him? I think he throws himself back into a good picture at light heavyweight. He said he wants to take it slowly, and I think that's a really good idea. But I like that he's back in the division now as a solid name. I think he's sixth in the rankings, and that's what I mean. He's coming off a win, sixth in the rankings. He's got something good ahead of him. I'm going to chuck three fights at you.
Okay.
Number one, Nikita Krylov, a good opponent who's ranked one beneath him. He lost to Glover Teixeira, but he beat Johnny Walker recently. I think that fight makes sense. They're very similar in the rankings, and they're both guys who don't necessarily, they might deserve the main event, but they don't deserve the title shot next or anything like that, but they definitely do need a fight that gets them closer to that. Now, mentioning him, the main comes up again, the big old man, Johnny Walker. He's just beat Ryan Spann. He's a big draw at 205 pounds. And this fight, in my opinion, is a main event. If you put Smith versus Johnny Walker as a main event, I'll watch that on a fight night, without a doubt. I definitely think that's a fight that could be made once more. They both need fights. They're both coming off wins now. And it offers this Johnny Walker explosive kind of sort of untested guy versus Anthony Smith, a guy who is, as I said, 50 fights into his career now. I think that works. But third one would be the third fight I'm going to chuck at you, my preferred fight. Give me Thiago Santos versus Anthony Smith 2 at light heavyweight.
I like that one. I like that one the best.
Mate, it would be awesome. The two previous fights, Walker and Krylov, I get they are similar in the rankings. They need fights. So the fight makes sense because they need a fight to push themselves closer to the title, and so does Smith. So that works for everyone. But Santos is coming off a loss. Mm-hmm. Smith and Santos have fought before, and for me, it works as a fight. They've both fought a middleweight before. I believe Santos won that by a body kick. As I said, that fight for me works perfectly.
I agree with that.
They both need the fight. They're both big draws. They both fought for a title against Jones. Run it back at £205. Let's see what these guys can do with the extra £20 on them. And I will certainly be tuning into that.
Yeah, 100%.
But that is our UFC recap complete. Before we move on to our preview of this weekend's event, I just want to talk a little bit about one boxing match that we didn't discuss on last week's episode. No, it's not Tyson versus Jones Jr. It's not Dubois versus Joyce. It's YouTube sensation Jake Paul knocking Nate Robinson clean out. What did you think?
Mate, right. I'm not going to say anything. Like, I can't say anything because that was a clean knockout. You know what I mean? But you've got a YouTube sensation who's going to... It's like the KSI versus Logan Paul all over again. It was an NBR star versus Jake Paul.
Yep.
If it was a boxer, yeah, maybe an amateur or semi-pro boxer versus Jake Paul, then we'd give him credit. But that knockout, you can't say anything about that knockout, can you?
Well, I'm going to say something about it. But I partially agree. I must admit, I was impressed with Paul's boxing. And that goes to kind of what you're saying is he's not fighting a boxer, that's why. So you can understand, you can't say he is a boxer at all. But I genuinely felt very sorry for Robinson. There was a clear difference in ability, and I do think Nate initiated the clinch more often than not, basically because he didn't know what to do in there. He was knocked down 3 times, and each knockdown was pretty heavy. The final faceplant KO was actually rough to watch. The punch was clean and genuinely good boxing by Paul, but I didn't like seeing Robinson drop like that, and I think the ref was god-awful. I understand what you're saying when you say like you can't really talk about the knockout because it's not against... And you can kind of see that even every knockdown, it was as if he had been knocked out by someone like Tyson.
You had Snoop Dogg commentate, man.
Yeah, I know. That's good old Snoopy. But do you know what I mean? Like, I felt sorry for Nate, and I think they kind of fed him to the wolves. And I'm going to call this. I think the fight was rigged. I'm not saying the decision was. I'm not saying that Nate knew he was going to get knocked out. But I think Paul boxed well. But watch those knockdowns. Nate has much longer than 10 seconds to continue. And I think that maybe the referee was advised to let the fight go on as long as possible to get to that KO finish. And that's what happened. And I know that's a big claim. I'm not saying it in the sense that I think I'm gonna protect our backs here and saying that this is just my opinion. There's no fact towards it at all. But as I said, watch the first knockdown. It's genuinely like a 13 to 14 second count because the ref decides to move to the other side of Robinson and count from 5 to 6 in that time. So on 5, he's on Robinson's kind of left side, and then he goes to the other side of him, on the right-hand side of him, and he goes from 6 again. You think, hold on, you ain't moved around there in a second. Like, I do think it was a bit dodgy. And then Robinson was walking around, not giving very good body language at all, and the ref let it continue. Now, I think if that was in a professional boxing fight, this fight would have been called already. And I think that was a slightly rigged element of the fight, and I think that's what embarrassed Nate. I think they kind of wanted one of these two guys to knock each other out. And I think, as I said, it was kind of advised that don't let it finish on on the first knockdown. If they're able to get up, let them continue. And it's a really hard topic because on one side, I think celebrity boxing does rejuvenate this side of the sport. And I think it's doing bits for figures. Like Logan Paul versus KSI was Zone's biggest ever stream for pay-per-view buys or something like that. And I think that's a fair amount basically dedicated to the fact that these guys can sell the fight. Simple as that. They are what people want to see. So I get that it brings eyes to the sport that you wouldn't expect to come to the sport. However, it's also so dangerous because that was a brutal KO. And if officials are being advised to rig the fight, I'm not saying he was, but if they are, it's not sport, it's entertainment. And someone who's amateur at this is going to get seriously hurt. You even saw the way he fell. It was dangerous. And if they're sort of doing it for the sense of like we need
a highlight.
Exactly. Then I think that's very, very dangerous. I'm all for entertainment. I'm all for adopting a new approach. However, if I had to choose between expanding the sport or someone's health, it's their health every day of the week. Mm-hmm. So that's my piece on it. Let's move on to our preview of next weekend's card instead. once more, we're just going to delve into the main and co-main event of the UFC. And first up, a co-main event between the veteran of the sport and a rising talent. Two big old boys at light heavyweight. The 25-14 Ovin St. Preux versus the 8-0 Jamahal Hill. It's very frustrating to see Hill's record at the moment because some sites have it as 6-0, some have it as 7-0. And that's because his last bout with Cleiton Abreu was overturned after Hill failed a medical drugs test for marijuana. Therefore, the Nevada State Athletic Commission have made the fight a no contest, and that's very, very frustrating.
Speaking on that, Nicole Price has just been tested for marijuana as well.
Yeah, so he's got a ban, hasn't he?
So would that not do him with Donald Cerrone?
It very well could. That would be worth looking to it. If it was before the fight, then yes, I believe it would. And it depends where the fight was held as well, because I think it's California and Nevada might have different ones, or they might have the same. But if you went over to the East Coast, it might not be. I mean, it's very frustrating because Hill knocked Abreu down twice and got an awesome finish over a very respectable opponent, only to have it removed by a dumb rule, but also by a dumb decision. So if I don't agree that if they've smoked marijuana, that the fight should be overturned, because I don't really see what it does. But equally, if you know this is a banned substance, why take it?
Exactly.
What, like, I don't know why it's banned. I have no clue. I couldn't give you that side of it. But equally, if it's in the rules and you're going to lose a fight from your record, I just think it's dumb both ways. It's stupid. But he has served a 6-month suspension, and in fairness, he returns effectively against a guy that suggests he got the win on that night. Because OSP is a big draw for a guy with only 3 UFC fights. That's including the Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series.
Yeah.
If not, this is his 3rd UFC bout. So OSP is a proper decent opponent for the young fighter. And in my opinion, this offers a brilliant fight. You've got Hill coming off a TKO win, but he's not tested against a top 10 guy and lacks in experience. And then you've got OSP, a guy who has fought for the title, a guy who's fought the very best, so he definitely has the experience, but he's also a guy who we know can be knocked out cold.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a nice comparison between what they haven't fought slash what their weaknesses are as well. I like what the UFC are doing with OSP at the moment. He's coming off a fresh KO victory over the rising Alonzo Menifield, who at the time was 9-1, and that was a scary knockout. He beat that rising prospect, and now he gets the chance to take out another rising prospect in Hill. But Hill is a top character for the UFC. He brings fun and flair to his events, which is why I think the UFC are investing so much in him. But then he's yet to taste defeat in the octagon, and he's backing it up with a cool character with some great results. So I think that's a nice thing, is that it's not just this guy's just being chucked into anything who just because of his character. He has got some decent wins behind him. So I think it's going to be a really interesting bout. I see it going one of two ways.
I love this part.
Yes. Right, it's pretty much the same thing, but I see either man making a mockery of the other. I can honestly see OSP going in there, KOing Hill and derailing him, or taking him all 3 rounds and just giving him a lesson in MMA that shows he wasn't ready for this level of competition.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, I can also see Hill going in there, KOing OSP and getting that highlight reel finish and celebration, pushing him to greater things, or even replicating that Darko Stosic fight and it beat this guy across all 3 rounds and just dictating a pace that OSP can't compete with and loses through sheer volume. I think against Stosic, over 3 rounds, Hill landed something like 130 strikes and Stosic was about 30.
Jesus.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you can absolutely see he's got that talent. But if you can do that against OSP, then he will prove he's very much ready for these big name fights. What my ideal outcome would be that Hill takes the victory and we get a new 205-pound prospect. What I think he really needs to do to not lose is not to chase OSP and get KO'd like Menifield did.
On the back foot, I was going to say that,
Yeah. Hill has fluid striking and is a long guy. He could piece OSP up and use his distance to get the unanimous decision victory. Now, I'm going to put this out there. I think he needs to do 3 things to win, and he needs to avoid most of this, really. Number one, don't rush in. Keep your distance and watch out for the power punch that OSP possesses, We saw it happen against Manyfield. We know he can KO you with a left hand. If you get caught rushing in, you're done. Number two, if you do keep your distance, watch for OSP's left high kick. It's a signature of his that caught Corey Anderson with, and it could change the course of the fight at any moment. It's so easy to say, yeah, keep your guard up, yeah, watch out. But you have to watch out for that, because if you're going to keep your distance, that's how OSP is going to try and knock you out. Finally, number three, do not take this fight to the ground. Engage in a grappling exchange with OSP, but keep it in the clinch. I spoke about OSP's signature move, and his most signature move is, it's signature enough they've even put his bloody name on it, the OSP, or the Von Flu choke. He is so good at catching guys with it. So do anything he can to avoid any ground game with this guy, because he will sleep you. And I genuinely think as well, regarding clinch work, if he engages in grappling, watch for OSP on the break, because I think he could catch OSP with a few knees in the clinch and then an elbow in the break that might put OSP out of there. So that is my prediction. Either heel by decision or TKO, but do not be surprised if it goes the exact other way around and OSP picks up the win. What do you think?
Jesus Christ, I think you've just said everything not to do for heel, so I think OSP is going to win.
Wait, bet against me. Why not?
Don't take him down, don't chase him.
Well, as I said, that's what I mean. It's so easy to just call that as a spectator's viewpoint. But for me, I just think it makes sense to say, like, there are moments I personally think OSP is very lax in his game. And I do think, striking especially, OSP's quite...
Yeah.
I think he leaves his chin quite exposed. But equally... You thought a guy like Alonzo Menifield would be able to go in there and just KO him clean, and OSP reversed that completely. So I do think this fight Hill could win and really pick up a decent victory, but he can't go in there thinking he's going to dictate the pace and destroy the fight. He needs to be sharp 24/7. Mm-hmm. Because, as I said, even if he starts dominating OSP by using that range and generally using a great skill set, because OSP in the past as well, especially against when he fought Ben Rothwell, I thought OSP looked like he didn't care about being in there. I genuinely thought he looked a little bit just lazy. He was losing the fight all the time, and then just wasn't pushing for anything. So for me, Hill might notice that and be like, yeah, right, I can do that to him, and start getting comfortable. And as I said, the moment he starts getting comfortable, OSP will start going for the finish. And if OSP can get him down and get him the Von Flu choke, he will go. Simple as that. And equally, if OSP can land a head kick, or if Hill starts getting confident and starts rushing in a bit, OSP will knock him out. So that's what I mean. I do think that this is Hill's fight to lose. But equally, if he starts dominating the fight, he just needs to realise that this is going to still be three hard rounds for him. It's not going to be like he can just embarrass OSP and OSP is going to want to get out of there. He needs to be sharp 24/7, because if not, I do think OSP could flip the fight on its head and take Hill out there. Right, let's move on to our main event of the evening, our final breakdown of this weekend. We have another change to this card's main event, and it's a battle between the Europeans once more. Marvin Vettori steps in to face Jack Hermanson after Kevin Holland pulled out due to a positive COVID test. I am really glad that Vettori saved the day here, and I'm glad that he's getting his shot. I think if you check out our first Ultimate MMA episodes, I said there and then that Vettori deserves a shot soon, and he has one here. Firstly, this fight has been changed three times now, with Hermanson being the old faithful in there. Firstly, Till pulled out due to injury, which for me was the number one contenders fight after Whittaker gets his rematch. And then Kevin Holland stepped in, what was it, to keep his... I think he's on a five-fight win streak in 2020. It might be four, and this would have been his fifth. So I thought, yeah, hit like Holland, I like that. But then last week, he gets a positive COVID-19 test, and now we see Italy's Marvin Vettori step in against Jack Joker Hermanson. I like this fight. I think both guys have a great skill set, and I think they oppose each other well. Firstly, Vettori's volume across all his UFC fights is very, very impressive. He may not seem the most entertaining fighter, but he gives every guy he fights, win, lose, a tough brawl. I think if you look at his fights, he averages something like 30 strikes per round, which is something some people don't even manage in the entire fight, which is what I like about him. He's riding a 3-fight win streak at the moment, and his last loss came against the man who holds the title today, stylebender Israel Adesanya. That is really impressive that he's only ever lost by decision. Overall, I think he's a very, very, very well-rounded fighter with a good submission game, and he can cause most guys problems. He really, really impressed me last time out against Carl Robertson. I think this is what led me to conclude he deserves a run now. He made a mockery of a 9-2 fighter, and there were two things that I took from his fight with Robertson: pride and punishment. Pride comes from his passion before the fight. He has such a rough run with the UFC in 2020. His March fight in London with Darren Stewart was cancelled due to COVID. And then the obviously that cancelled pretty much all events. So it wasn't that anyone caught COVID, it was that every major sporting event got cancelled. Then he has his fight with Robertson cancelled twice. The first to do with the coronavirus, followed by the second due to Robertson withdrawing the night before due to illness. I think it was the night before he had a poor weight cut and then he just couldn't do it. So then the fight finally gets rescheduled a month or so later. Vittorio's grandfather contracts COVID, and then on the day of the weigh-ins, Robertson once more misses weight, which just led to a breakdown from Vittorio. This Hulk-like man erupted from inside of him, and there was a big altercation between them in the hotel lobby, which, in fairness, after everything he went through, was justified. It wasn't like Vittorio was trying to do this for the cameras or being a prick. Genuinely, if your opponent doesn't take a weight cut seriously, then fuck him. A month before that, they didn't take it seriously and it cancelled your fight. And then the next month, they still don't take it seriously. They don't
exactly,
weigh in. This is a profession. This guy, Vittorio, needs to feed his family. And if you can't take it seriously enough, then don't sign a contract to fight him. Simple as that. Vittorio goes in there, and the next night, absolutely obliterated Robertson. He landed a total of... I love this fact. He lands a total of 60 strikes to Robertson's 4 strikes. And that was in 4 minutes. That is one strike every 4 seconds.
Jesus, man.
Like, that is so impressive. 60 strikes in 4 minutes. That said, some people don't even land that in a whole fight. And after 4 painful minutes, he sinks in the rear naked choke and forces Robertson to tap. That, to me, my friend, is a fantastic tale. What do you think about Vittori, and what do you think about the fight?
I think it's the last... It is a last-minute call-up, so he has been through a lot, like you've just said. I reckon it's a great fight. Do you reckon that'll be a number one contender?
Till was what made it a number one contender.
Yeah.
I think Holland potentially pushed it there, because you could argue he would have been on like 5 or 6 fight win streak. That would have made sense in just this year. But now I don't think Vittori would get number one contender shot, but I think if Hermanson wins this, he potentially does. But I think Vittori, if he wins this, goes to like a top 5 position and then gets a couple of decent shots.
Who do you reckon you'll have, if just say he wins this, who do you reckon you'd fight next to get into that top 5?
Vittori.
Wins by devastating knockout.
I think, obviously, Costa needs a matchup. I do think Romero needs something pushed towards him, because Romero hasn't done anything for a long time now, has he?
No.
I think Romero or Costa, because I think they are both the most realistic in there. I think Till Hermanson probably is made again, so potentially if Vittori beats Hermanson, then they make that fight instead.
I like to see both of them, aye.
Well, I'm just going through it now. Vittori's 13th. Hermanson's ranked 4th. So if Vittori wins, he goes up to 4th. Jared Cannonier, potentially. Cannonier versus Vittori. If Vittori jumped to 4th, winning this, then I would say probably Cannonier could be his next fight, actually. I'm just seeing that now. Unless then Romero, Cannonier, and Costa are all mixed together. I think it's going to be one of them three. Well, I do just want to talk a little bit. I talked a lot there about Vittori and bigged him up, but I have to talk about his opponent. He's coming against a very deserving guy in Jack Hermanson, who was on a tear before he faced a huge setback in his loss to Jared Cannonier. Hermanson was on a 4-fight win streak over Talish Lathers, Gerald Mershart, David Branch, and Jacare Souza. Like, they are all top 10 guys at some stage. And then after he's lost to Cannonier in his hometown as well. But then he goes out against the former title challenger, Kelvin Gastelum, and rectified this by submitting him in just over a minute of round number one. What a way to say that you are still here.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You suffer a big loss, as I said, in your hometown. A big upset. Then you come back in a minute and submit a guy who fought for the title. I like Hermanson a lot. Not only do I think that he's a very nice guy, and you get, and although that gets you nowhere nowadays, I also think he's a very well-rounded, solid fighter. And I think he might be one of the best, if not the best, current submission artist in the middleweight division. I genuinely think that if you go through that division, I mean, I'll name you the top 15 here. Adesanya, Whittaker, Costa, Cannonier, Hermanson, Romero, Till, Brunson, Gastelum, Hall, Weidman, Shabazian, Akhmedov, Vettori, Brad Tavares, and Ian Heinisch. I don't think there's another person in that top 15 who is a better submission artist than Jack Hermanson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The only one there is Chris Weidman, but I think Hermanson's got a better submission game than he does. And that seems weird to go through it, because obviously someone has to be the best submission artist. But when you consider his all-around game is pretty good, I think that's very, very impressive to say, actually. I think that's one of his best weapons, and that's what makes him one of the hardest fights here. Now, he took a risk taking this fight, but it might well pay off, because I think if he wins, he puts himself one fight away from a title shot. Either a rematch with Till, or a fight with, say, Costa, or the Cannonier rematch. But he took a fight with the number 13 ranked guy on short notice.
Yeah.
Like, he trained for Till and Holland. Both very impressive strikers. Now he faces a very different opponent. However, he has had a full camp behind him, and is definitely going to be the favourite on the night. But having said this, I'm going to make a bold claim here, and usually my bold claims do not go my way. I think Vettori picks up a shock victory here. I think he takes the decision. He was already training for a fight this night and had camps for bouts with Akhmedov and Jacare Souza. So they were cancelled for him to get here. I think the Akhmedov fight was cancelled due to COVID, but then the Jacare fight was... Jacare's now fighting Kevin Holland on December the 12th, and Vettori steps into the main event. So I like that fight's obviously been kind of cancelled for him to get here. He's had a full camp against these guys, but he's trained for two very different guys. But arguably, they are more similar to Vettori than... Akhmedov and Souza are more similar to Hermanson than Vettori is to Till or Holland, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm thinking that Vettori might have a slight advantage in that department. I think he can come in here, and both guys will put on a great fight across five rounds, and I think it's going to be Vittori's frame and volume that gets him the win. Hermanson threatens so much with submissions, but we have never seen Vettori finished. He's only ever lost by decision. Now, Jack can pull off these submissions in a very unorthodox manner, and it's impressive how he can just pull them out of nowhere. So I think it's a tale of whether Vettori can avoid these attempts, and whether Jack can change things around if he's unable to get the finish off his back. If Jack is going to go for the submission but cannot do it, then I think Vittori's going to take it.
Yeah.
For me, Vittori's much better keeping this fight on the feet, and Hermanson is much better being patient and waiting for Vettori to engage a clinch or takedown, and then go for a guillotine or an unorthodox submission finish. But my final verdict is Vettori to take it by unanimous decision.
Oh, what about you? I'm opposite. I think if Vettori goes in, he takes him, like, he's striking him. He goes for a while. He strikes. And then he gets threatened by a double leg, taken down, or he gets caught on the back foot.
Yeah, no. That as I said, I definitely think there is a big risk with Hermanson's grappling and submission skills. So I think that's why Vettori needs to be... Hermanson needs to be patient to wait for Vettori to slip up. But equally, Vettori needs to be on the balls of his feet the whole time. And as I said, his volume is fantastic. So if he can get volume across, say, the three rounds, solidly win three rounds, then the next two he can focus on not getting finished. And then he takes a fight.
Yeah.
In opposed to trying to get the finish, because if he tries to get the finish,
I think he's too like strong and built. Like he's built like a brick.
He is a big old boy. But no, exactly. Like if he pushes for that finish, then I think he leaves himself open for Hermanson to finish him, because Hermanson's so clinical with his submissions. But we're gonna move on to a few fight announcements to talk about to close the show. And I say fight announcements, I actually mean a fight cancellation. The number one bullshit fight between Kazma Chimaev and Leon Edwards is off. That's due to Edwards testing positive for COVID. For COVID-19. It's really strange in here because last week Chimaev was, like, there was reports that he had it, and then we heard nothing for about 4 days, and then it comes out that it was actually Leon who has it. So I just hope that Edwards gets recovers well and in 2021 he gets a really good fight. Whether it's Chimaev or not, I don't know. As I said, me and you are pretty clear with this, that it's a pretty bullshit fight. But as I said, I just hope that Leon gets speedy recovery and that all of him and his family and, say, like, Fabian and anyone who trains at Renegade.
Yeah, everyone trains him, yeah.
Yeah, I hope they're all safe because it's very, very bad. Now, a few fight announcements. I'm looking forward to one of these, especially, well, two of these, actually, because one of them is one of my favourite fighters. The other one, I just am looking forward to talking to you. Alex Morono is facing Anthony Pettis, booked for December the 19th. So, not, what, 2.5 weeks away?
Is that the new main event, then?
No, it's not even the main event. It's just on the night. So, I assume that's stepping in, because I think the main event is Neil versus Wonderboy. But yeah, Morono Pettis has stepped in there, and if I'm honest, I love that. I really want to see that fight, because we just saw Morono beat Rhys McKee, and then Pettis going in there. Obviously, everyone wants to see Pettis fight. I think that is a brilliant, brilliant match, and what I'm so wowed about with this, imagine Rhys McKee. Imagine if he had beaten Morono.
Against Pettis, yeah. Oh, imagine. Jesus.
God. That's, I mean, to think that Rhys McKee right now could be facing Anthony Pettis. I mean, that's not to rub it in with Rhys. I think he's brilliant. He's going to be back with a bang. But
100%.
Yeah, I love this fight. I love that it's been stepped in for the 19th card. Obviously, with Chimaev and Edwards off, I think that's given us a bit more hope again for the card. And as I said, I'm just shocked that it's such a quick turnaround, especially against someone like Anthony Pettis.
Yeah,
love it. Then my second fight to talk about. This is one of my favourite fighters. We have Shane Burgos versus Hakeem Dawodu for January the 23rd. Burgos, for me, if you haven't seen his highlights, I'm sure you will have, but his striking is just awesome. His striking, his head movement, and his body work is just beyond brilliant for me. He's a bit like a Gaethje for me. Mm-hmm. He's lost a few fights, but every fight that he's been in have been entertaining. Like, pure skill. His boxing ability is just ridiculous, and his hands, when he lets them go, are awesome. This is at featherweight, but then Dawodu is a fantastic, more kind of kickboxing style fighter, and he's one of Canada's top prospects, like, without a doubt. I think he's maybe 14-1 or a similar record to that. These two guys are massive prospects for the sport for me, and in my opinion, this could get fight of the night. I called fight of the night when Burgos fought Josh Emmett, and it was fight of the night. In fact, I think he even got nominated for a fight of the year. Burgos just brings everything for me. I think he's awesome. And then I said Dawodu for me as well. Is if Dawodu wasn't fighting Burgos, I'd be singing Dawodu's praises here. So that's definitely a fight to keep an eye out for. And before people watch that fight, just literally look up some of these guys' highlights, because they put on fantastic bouts. The final fight to talk about, we're actually jumping all the way to March the 6th. Josef Benavidez is back, and he's facing Askar Askarov. Another fight I really like, because I called this 6 months ago, maybe, with Askarov. I said that guy's going to be one of the next flyweight contenders, and so he is. He's a brilliant fighter. He's 13-0, and he's one of them guys, a bit like Khabib, just wrestles people and just destroys people. He looks brilliant, but now he comes up against Benavidez, who he's not going to be able to out-wrestle for a whole 5-round fight. If it's 5-round, it might not be the main event, but it's going to be at least 3 rounds, and I don't think he'll be able to do that against Benavidez. And we get to see Benavidez back, not against Tyson Figueiredo, because I don't want to see him knocked out again. I really don't. So I love that fight as well. March 6th, Benavidez versus Askarov. That will, I think, determine one of the next flyweight challenges. Yeah. Whether Benavidez gets the win or Askarov, I think the winner of that is one fight away from a shot against Figgy.
Are you heard the story about Khabib?
Oh, which one?
Like yesterday, he says he'll come out of retirement if Dana pays him $100 million to fight.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I hadn't seen that. I had seen reports that Khabib said he will only fight again if he gets his mother's permission. Now, I said this would bloody happen. fucking. I knew he was.
I remember because I
knew he would say like it's going to be down to his mum, or it's going to be down to him saying like his dad's final wish was him to go 30-0, and his mum's giving him his permission. I can already picture the promo for this. but yeah, I didn't know about the 100 million. He's not going to ever get that. But I think Khabib was on about 6 million a fight. So I think he will get, if they can pull off a fight in Abu Dhabi, because I think that's where a lot of that money comes from. I think they could offer him about 10 to 15 million to fight GSP. If it is, obviously, GSP is the final fight.
How much did McGregor and Floyd make? I can't remember. Was that 100 million?
I believe Floyd made 80, and I believe McGregor made 20, but I could be very wrong with them figures there. But I think that was the pays for it. I think it was a 100 million fight, but Floyd was considerably more.
Yeah.
But yeah, as I said, if that is the news of Khabib, then it's good. But I know he's also started the Eagle Fight Federation, hasn't he? I think he's starting his own fighting promotion. Which
I bet you said he wanted to be. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, mate. It'd be really interesting. I'm hoping that something like that comes along. Just another person to mention with that, if it is going to be Khabib and kind of Dagestan and Russia, or even like the Middle East, Abu Dhabi and that, if he does create his own combat federation, look out for Mohammed Mokaev in Brave Combat Federation at the moment. He's that young guy, 4-0 at the moment. He's got another matchup booked already, so he'll probably go 5-0. He went 23-0 in his amateur career and wrestled with Team GB, etc. He is basically tipped to be one of the next kind of Khabibs. If Khabib does create his own federation, I do think we might see Mokaev pushing through that. Yeah. I say give it 2, maybe 3 years. Look out for the name Mohammed Mokaev. He is going to be one of the next champions.
I watched that flying knee. Jesus.
Yeah, awesome, isn't it? Yeah, as I said, anyone listening, we know him. If you don't, go check him out. He keep on him now, basically. There's no doubt for me that he is a future champ. That is sadly all we have time for this week. Thank you guys so much for tuning into the Ultimate MMA Podcast. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to us, and be sure to tune in next week, where we'll recap the results of this weekend's card and preview the next card, which takes place on Saturday the 12th of December. And we have an absolutely brilliant card start to finish. I think UFC 256 brings you 5 genuinely exciting bouts in their main card, which you will not want to miss. I've been your host, Jake Jones. I want to say a massive thank you to my co-host, Sean, this week. He might not be able to do it in the next few weeks because he's got his ears fired out. But I'm sure we'll find some time for it. Anyone, be sure to let us know any feedback you have for the podcast and keep an ear out over the next few weeks as we have a Christmas special coming and we have set our categories for our year awards. We're going to be calling it the Herbs. Don't know why. We're just going to call it that.
Oh,
but
no.
There are years.
It just sounds like Herb Dean. It sounds like a referee program. No. The Herb Dean.
Yeah, as I said, we've settled some of our categories for that. So over the next few weeks, me, Sean, and Liam are going to be getting our nominations in there and then listen to the podcast and let us know who you think wins. Thank you so much and take care.